I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Oh yeah, what is up, homies? Welcome back to the Outkick Bets podcast. I'm the host, Jeff Clark. I got my fellow NBA gambling junkie, David Troy, here on Zoom to discuss the three NBA playoff game threes on Thursday, April 25th. We got the Orlando Magic hosting the Cleveland Cavaliers, New York Knicks visiting the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Denver Nuggets at the Los Angeles Lakers. How are you doing so far in the playoffs?
My futures look great, which is awesome because those are the bigger plays, but the day-to-day stuff, not great. Honestly, like, it's been a lot of 1-1 days, but then there was an 0-3 day, and yesterday I was 0-1, and then I had a 2-1 in there. I mean, it's kind of been all over the place, nothing consistent enough for me to be too happy about.
Gotcha. I'm 12-13 on my playoff bets, which includes a 6-0 performance in the play-in games. I am up 3 units though. We got a plus 12% ROI, plus 1% CLV. So kind of like how I'm seeing it right now, but dude, I'm only doing leans right now in the player props, unless you really like one of the leans and then maybe I can add it to my betting card, but I am 0-3 in player props. Granted, I've had the foresight to know that my player prop analysis is a little weak, so I downsize those bets significantly. Like, I'm putting like a quarter or a third of a unit on these. I am losing in totals as well. I'm 1-2 in totals, so it's really just sides and these money lines that are holding me afloat so far. But I don't know, man. I think I'm going to rebound. I know you're going to rebound.
Well, I appreciate that. I think so too. With player props, actually, I've struggled with them as well in terms of results, but I don't regret any of the bets. There is one, like, I regret betting the Bucks the other night against the Pacers. I feel like I forced it. And looking back at the rest of my bets, I'm pretty happy with the ones that I did, the player props especially. Like, I talked to you the other day, Tyrese Halliburton had over 10.5 assists. He had 20 potential assists. I mean, you can't really ask for much more than that. Even Chet Holmgren had 15.5 points. He ended up with 15 in that game, and he had a ton of shots that he missed. And then last night I didn't bet it again, even though I said I probably should bet this one again for the same reasoning. And he ended up with 20 points in the first half. So it's not like the reads have been terrible. It's just I haven't gotten the results that I need. And even last night I bet on Valanciunas to go over his rebounds. He ended up with 7, but it was a complete blowout. And he just didn't get the rebounds. He had 20 or something in the first game.
Yeah. I think he scored the first 11 points of the Pelicans and was just bodying their interior. So you were looking good.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I probably should have done. This would have been a good opportunity for that, like points and rebounds probably. I don't know what it was set at yesterday, but his offense was good. He wasn't getting many misses and putbacks like he did in the first game. So.
Yeah, last time we connected, I went 2-1 on my best bets.
Me too.
We joked about the loss that I was definitely going to take, and I ended up taking, which was the Los Angeles Clippers. I gave it out in the morning before knowing Kawhi Leonard's status. No one could ever know for sure that guy's status, but part of my handicap was like, I think the Clippers could win without Kawhi Leonard, and I don't know if I wrote this specifically, but it's like, you know, having a few more glue guys out there instead of another one-on-one ISO scorer who, despite him being elite, maybe is like too many cooks in the kitchen, was kind of my analysis. And then he ended up getting inserted in the lineup after I locked in my plus money bet on the Clippers. I got him plus 110. They ended up going up to minus 1.5 as we were recording, and I joked about how I got a CLV and Clippers curse. And whenever both of those things combine, I'm pretty much, I think I'm like 0 for 20. Like, I hate that team. I could go on an obscenity-laced tirade about how much I hate that team and how I wish AIDS upon them, but I'll save that for the next time we talk about the Los Angeles Clippers. I don't know when their next game is. Probably tomorrow. But I went 1-1 yesterday's bets. Didn't have the time or energy to write them out on Outkick.com. I spent too much time handicapping the NFL draft, which I don't even really like to bet. Sorry if that noise is affecting your guys' listening experience. I got some street sweeping going by, but we're good now. And I split my two bets yesterday. Unfortunately, I did sprinkle on the Pelicans' money line on top of their plus 7.5, and they got boat raced. But my anti-Clippers, the Miami Heat, just keep making me money. I love it. I obviously, my biggest rooting interest in the playoffs, David, is the New York Knicks. But the second is I want the Heat to beat the Celtics so bad. It would be hilarious. Like, I will stay awake waiting for Bill Simmons' podcast to hit Apple Podcasts. I just hope it happens.
You got to wonder if Mazzulla's job would potentially be in jeopardy if they lost the Heat without Butler 2 years in a row.
If Mazzulla's job is in jeopardy?
Yeah, I would have to wonder. I mean, obviously their regular season success is good, but I think as a franchise you have to start questioning if there's some sort of issue with the team once it gets to the playoffs, if he has the ability to bring them to the championship. And I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I would wonder if his job would be in jeopardy.
You think Mike Budenholzer is house shopping in Boston right now?
Hey, man, he wouldn't be a bad choice. He's actually a good coach.
He's a very good coach. He got fired because Giannis can't hit free throws.
Yeah, I know. We brought that one up before.
Yeah, I've white knighted for does that apply to dudes? Well, I white knighted for Budenholzer plenty of times. I actually met him once during the when I was working for the Los Angeles Clippers. And he was an assistant for the San Antonio Spurs. And it was in the midst of the Jeremy Lin thing. And we asked him, like, how serious or, like, how worried are you about the Jeremy Lin, like, explosion? Like, and from like, a coaching perspective. And he kind of had, like, a smile on his face. Like, we'll be all right, I think. Yeah. It's like, all right, fair enough. And, yeah. Like, that's how I felt at the time. I was like, because I'm a Knicks fan, and like our coach is Mike D'Antoni at the time, and it's like any point guard can produce with Mike D'Antoni in a Mike D'Antoni offense. That's like his whole thing. Like my like biggest example of that being true is Chris Duhon actually has the single game record for most assists in a Knicks uniform. Chris Duhon, who was once the number one recruit in the country as a McDonald's All-American to Duke, but not very good as a pro. But so I just asked him about Linsanity, and he was cool, and he's like, yeah, we'll be all right, I think. We're not that tripping. So anyways, I like Mike Budenholzer, and to your point, and kind of what I was getting at, I'm a big run it back guy, but I think Mazzulla to Budenholzer is an obvious upgrade, and that if you can make, you should. But otherwise, it's like, it's on the players to figure it out.
I agree. I don't think coaches should be held that responsible for certain things. To your point about Giannis not hitting free throws, I mean, Budenholzer probably still has a job if Giannis hits his free throws. Yeah. But I don't know. I think there is something to be said, too, about, like, adjustments. Like, I think Darvin Ham is completely overmatched in this Lakers-Nuggets series. I don't know any other way to put it. Like, yeah, he isn't out on the floor allowing the Nuggets to take a 20-point, you know, swing, but he could stop certain things or he could adjust certain things.
Weren't me and you talking about that, or maybe I just heard it on a podcast, but like D'Angelo Russell hit like a huge three and then started,
we were talking about it,
you were saying it, and they were celebrating and Darvin Ham had to like push him up the court.
Yeah.
Like that's one where it's like, it's not your fault, dude.
No, it's not. But
it's like,
again,
it's like when a quarterback or a football team commits a false start in a playoff game. It's like, oh, the coaching. It's like, do you think the coach should tell them to wait for the ball to move? Like, really? You think they got to get that, you know what I mean? Like that micromanaging. But
right.
I don't know. Like I kind of defer to you on this stuff just because I think you played high school basketball, you played under a coach and stuff like that. And so you can maybe pick up on coaching better than I can. But yeah, I mean, I think it is kind of straightforward that he is getting out coached by Mike Malone. It's just, I do kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. It's like when you have, it's easy to coach the most gifted offensive player ever, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that to a certain extent, but to your point, I mean, Malone is clearly putting in things that the Lakers just don't have answers for.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's because you got Jokic, and I don't know, but Ham just doesn't seem to have answers, and I think some of these coaches just they don't know how to make adjustments, or they are too slow to do them. And I don't know what the issue necessarily is, but there's a reason that like Spoelstra gets the most out of his players, and even Tyronn Lue is actually like
he's a pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, he's a pretty solid coach who knows what he's doing. Like, I don't think Frank Vogel is a very good coach over in Phoenix, but he's won a championship. So you kind of have to start wondering, like, is it the championship, or is it the players that did it for that particular year, or did he actually make adjustments that year that worked? Maybe it's a balance of things, or things just that, can he not do it with the current personnel that he has? So it's a combination of stuff, obviously.
But that's a great example. The same coach, different team, same type of analysis. Remember I was talking about how I like the Timberwolves in game two, and I like them in the series because they have more glue guys, right? If you remember, the L.A. bubble team that won the title, they had a bunch of glue guys. They had Caruso.
They
had KCP. They had McGee. They might have had Dwight Howard. They had a couple serviceable bigs, right? But they had just had more glue guys. And, like, the Suns don't have any of that. And, like, the Lakers don't have enough of that this season. Like, D'Angelo Russell is completely useless without the ball, and he's a negative if sometimes with the ball if he's not hitting his shots. But you look at the other players in their team, are they glue guys? Like, I think me and you both think Austin Reeves is overrated at best, probably sucks a little bit, right? Like, Rui Hachimura is another guy who, if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, is pretty much useless. Like, who are their glue guys? Because Anthony Davis and LeBron are balling. You know what? I'll let you respond, but we should probably get into the handicapping of these games since we're 13 minutes in. Do you want to save the rest of your Nuggets, Lakers, Vogel comments for when we get there, or do you have anything to say?
No, if anything, I was just going to talk about how actually terrible this roster was from their championship. Because I was like, I don't even remember who was on this team, and there are some names on there that are interesting. So,
all right, let's save it. We'll circle back on this.
Let's just move on. Yeah.
All right, we'll talk about the Magic hosting the Cleveland Cavaliers first. It's 7 o'clock Eastern Standard tip-off. The Cavs are up 2-0 as the series heads back to Orlando. The Magic are 2.5-point favorites. Total is up to 201. I think it was at 199 at one point. I played the Cavaliers. I talked myself into the Magic the other day, even though I don't really like the Magic. And they got waxed again. They lost by 10. They flirted with coming back and possibly sneaking to the back door for a cover. But I just think the Cavaliers are a much better team. Like, the way you attack them is in the backcourt, and their guards, the Orlando Magic guards, suck. And like, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley have been monsters in this series. They're going to be able to clog up the paint and contest anything at the rim. Franz Wagner can't shoot. Paolo Banchero is on and off with his jump shot. So if he can't get into the paint or do damage in the paint, it's hard to see how the Magic can score. So I don't know. I think anyone betting the Magic here is kind of saying, you know, I don't think the Cavs can sweep them. I do. I think they can sweep them. I think they're going to sweep them. That's kind of what I'm getting at here. And it's like, I don't know. Paolo Banchero is going to be awesome in a couple of years, but this is how it goes. Welcome to the playoffs, kid. Right? This is how it goes. So I took +2, but as we talked about, I've been cursed with CLV the entire year. It's at +2.5, which is what I gave it out publicly, because I'm only going to take the best number as I write. But truth be told, I did bet it last night at +2, because I thought there's no way the market's going to like the Magic. Can you make an argument for the Magic here? Or how are you looking at this game?
The argument would be that returning home, this is the game that they would steal. I mean, that's just typical kind of history stuff. Usually when they lose the first two games, you come home, you're comfortable in your own home, you start to do it. The only thing I would say is, if it really is a role player thing, then the Magic role players should play better because they are at home. But Cleveland's role players did not play well in that first game, and they still won by 14. And then they did play well in the second game, and they won by 10. So I'm going to just kind of say the same thing that I've said a lot. The spread really doesn't matter here. Either the Magic are going to win probably by 5 to 10 points, or Cleveland is going to win this game outright. I don't see it being like a super close game. Cleveland's either going to keep doing what they're doing, or the Magic are going to, you know, kind of come out with a ton of energy, build up a lead, and just not relinquish it. That, I think that's their only way they can win this, is if they come out hot in the first half. I would say first half is a better look for the Magic because of that reasoning. You're going home. You should get your energy. You get your fans behind you. You get the comfort of your own home. But to your point, there's not much that the Orlando offense can do that the Cavs can't stop. And I do have one player prop that I like in this game. It's Jalen Suggs under 12.5 points. He averages 13 at home on the season, but against the Cavs, he's had exactly one game where he's gone 13 or more points, and that was game one, where he took 16 shots and he was still only 4 for 16 in that game. So he's coming off of a sprained knee. It looks like everything's fine. He still played 29 minutes in the last game, so it wasn't like he sat too much. That's pretty much on average with what he was playing. But I don't really like him to be like the responsible one in this game. And obviously the backcourt of Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell aren't exactly good defenders, but Suggs isn't a very good shooter either. So I like him to go under his total. And I'm willing to take that under 12.5.
Okay. So I have a player prop lean. And it's somewhat correlated to your look. I'm going to go over Cole Anthony 5.5 points. Jalen Suggs injured his knee in the last game, but he's participating in practice and has really no his injury designation. But if there's any, if the knee flares up mid-game, there should be no hesitation in pulling him, because he's not good enough to stay in the game over Cole Anthony through an injury, right? Cole Anthony has shown some offensive capability this year and just throughout his career. He can get hot. Yeah. He's a microwave scorer. He's been terrible in the series. I think he scored 0 points last game, hence the 5-point total on his player prop. I got a +108, or I see a +108 at FanDuel. You know, I had some more notes on him. Let me get over there. Sorry about that, guys. Shoots better at home, like most role players do. He's actually got the fourth highest usage rate for Orlando in the series. He's only got a 15.7% true shooting, though. I anticipate that goes up. He shot 59% versus Cleveland in four regular season games. So, I mean, 5.5 is low. I think he's over a half three-pointer is juiced. So, you know, the market's anticipating him at least getting 3 points. So can he hit one more three-pointer? Can he get an and one at the bucket? We'll see.
Yeah, you're not asking for him to do much.
Right. And, I mean, don't the Magic need to try some shit offensively?
They need something.
So I don't know how many options they have. And Cole Anthony is certainly one of the few that they have. So that's a lean. And if I end up locking in a play, it's going to be like a quarter unit because I fucking suck in player props and did well last postseason, but it's not going well so far this postseason. So hopefully I rally here, but who knows?
I also would mention that I do like the look of Jared Allen to get over his rebounding prop. He's at 12.5. He's had 20 in the last game and 18 in the first game. Mm-hmm. And you're not asking this guy to do much more than just basically play the game that he normally does. It's at -105. It's actually juiced the under. But if you look at the 12, if you were to bet just 12 plus rebounds, it's at -185. So the books are kind of expecting him to get somewhere around 12 at the very least. And I kind of agree with it. It was actually the same idea that I had last night with Valanciunas. I just think that there's nobody to really keep him off the glass, and he'll get what he wants and go from there. But I'm only going to do the Suggs one. Just another one that I was originally looking at that I wanted to share.
I think Orlando's starting center right now is Jonathan Isaac, who's more of a wing.
For sure he is. Yeah.
And a lot of their shots are inside the arc, so you're not going to get those long rebounds, and he's going to be there protecting the rim anyways. And Orlando's not a very good free throw shooting team, so he can get a couple cheap free rebounds that way. So I don't hate it as well. I might do a tenth of a unit on that one. That I will not be attaching to my public betting card. I will not be putting that one. I take too many L's publicly. So let's go over to my New York Knicks visiting the Philadelphia 76ers for game 3 here. The Knicks are up 2-0. Both games have been sick. The last one was one of the better games in MSG history. The Knicks are getting 5.5 points. There's a 6 at Caesars. The total is, it's up to 204 at most places. There's even a 205.5 at Caesars. It's kind of wild. I gave it out at 201.5 earlier this morning. So I'm on the over here, and I'll tell you why. And I have a lean towards a player prop, which I've given out a few times. I can talk about that in a second, but what are your thoughts on this?
So you and I were texting about this game this morning a little bit, and I mentioned
I was furious in my bed.
Yeah, I could tell.
Arguing at 5 a.m.
I was like, I need to get out of this conversation. So I ended up – I'm on the Sixers. I think the Sixers win this game, and I think they win it relatively easily. I'm not saying they're going to blow them out because the Knicks always try hard. So taking the spread is going to be a little difficult. But this is one of those games where you probably expect the NBA to favor 76ers a little bit after missing those calls at the end of the game. I mean, they came out and admitted that it was a foul on Maxey. There have been numerous videos about Nick Nurse calling a timeout and the refs ignoring it. So I think in this case, you're probably going to see Embiid shoot between 700 and 800 free throws in the game.
Yeah, the 11.5 that he's averaging just is unfair. It's unfair.
No, but I do think, like, you know, that they're probably going to be able to get a few more calls than you would think originally, especially down the stretch. They'll probably get some. They haven't looked like a great team since Embiid has come back, but Embiid does look like he's getting better. Maxey has looked really good. Obviously, the defensive team is the Knicks, but in this particular case, I think you've seen the 76ers at least hang with the Knicks the first two games, and one of the things that I mentioned to you, I think you could make an argument that they could be up 2-0 instead of down 2-0 in the series if a couple of plays went a different way. Now, that's all hypothetical, and it doesn't matter because that's not what happened. But there is, like, it's not like they've just been blown out in these first games. They've been competitive. They've been right there. I think this one, they just get over the hump. And I still think the Knicks win the series, but I think the 76ers win this game.
Vancouver. I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Cover.
That's fair. I was always nervous about the 76ers as a Knicks fan.
Sure.
Just, we don't have much of an answer for, well, we might have as good of an answer for Joel Embiid as any team in the league between Mitchell Robinson when healthy. He's a little banged up again. Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, we can put Precious out there to get physical with him, eat up some fouls, even though he hasn't even played in this series. But I'm going over 201.5. Right now it's at 203.5. Maybe even 204. 204 is the highest that I play it. So if it's still at that number when you guys listen to this podcast, I would okay a bet there. But the Knicks have, there's six Knick players that are averaging double digits. And the Knicks are still due a good Brunson game and OG. In fact, I think four or five Knicks are shooting over 41% from three. But OG and Brunson are like below 20%. So I still think they can get some points. And the Knicks actually shoot better on the road. It's like one of those reverse home splits things. And I've always, we've talked about this in previous podcasts. It's MSG is fucking lively. It's sick. And the crowd really gets behind the Knicks. But the thing is, they get everyone's best effort because it's Madison Square Garden. So, like, yeah, like, there's just, like, the Charlotte Hornets, right? If a team from the West Coast goes into Charlotte, do they care? Or are they more, is it more possible that they have a down game because of effort? Yeah, that doesn't happen in the Garden, ever. Like, you always get people's best shot. So, the defense gets a little more intense, and you kind of see that in the shooting splits for the New York Knicks. Maxey and Embiid are just balling. I think they're averaging like 65 between them. So I think, you know, we're going to get a better Tobias Harris game and a better Kelly Oubre game and, you know, maybe Buddy Hield. One of these guys kind of breaks out and has a better shooting performance. So I think that's going to help the over cash a little bit. And then, you know, you can get the fouls, like Embiid and Maxey to a lesser extent can get to the foul line. Maybe Philly gets a little bit of home cooking with the officiating, and the New York Knicks aggressiveness and just attacking the glass, A, is going to get us a lot of second chance points, and B, can get us into the foul line a little bit. And plus Brunson has his own craftiness. So, you know, I think Philly's 3-point shooting improves. I think the Knicks' 3-point shooting stays pretty good. I think the Knicks score a lot of second chance points, and both teams can get a lot of free throws. So I'm going to go over, and I think this is the rare time where there is going to be two-way action on the total. Most of the public likes to bet the over in primetime games, regardless of the sport, but like they know this is a defensive matchup or that the that defenses could show up in this. So I'm going to go over the total.
I like it.
The player.
Oh, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's up?
No, I was just going to say, I was going to ask you about the team totals, if you've thought about them. Like,
I haven't.
If you had to pick one of them. No.
What is it?
99.5 for the Knicks and 105 for the 76ers. 104.5.
I think Philadelphia's path to beating New York is offensively. Like, I think we have too many guys that can figure out a way to score to keep us below 100. Maybe I'm flat wrong. We'll see. But I think if they beat our ass, it's more of like a 110 to 100 game, or, you know, a 112 to 103, something like that. You know what I mean? I do think we can get triple digits regardless.
Yeah.
The player prop that I was looking at, I bet this a few times, once unsuccessfully in game one, but go Hartenstein, Nick center Hartenstein, over 18.5 points, rebounds, and assists. He's cashed this in 15 of his last 18 games, including the playoffs. He had 14-8-4 in game two after struggling in game one. Or not struggling, just going under. I think he had 16 PRA in game one because Mitchell Robinson got a lot of run in game one. He got 30 minutes in game one, but only 18 in game two because he's kind of dealing with an ankle injury. And, like, if you're a Knicks fan, that's pretty much the Mitchell Robinson experience. The guy's frequently hurt. So I also used this analysis for game one, and it applies for game three. And really, as the series goes on, we're, I feel like it's smart if Tibbs puts Joel Embiid in actions and does a lot of dribble handoffs with Isaiah Hartenstein and kind of gets Isaiah Hartenstein involved in the offense just to make Embiid run a little bit more, just to test that knee a little bit more. So I'm going to go lean again over Hartenstein 18.5 PRA. Cool.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
I mean,
you don't have Mitchell to have Robinson. Any.
No, Mitchell Robinson can just throw a monkey wrench into the whole thing, which I think is the issue I have with the whole situation.
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah, in 30 minutes last game, he went far above that total. So I don't hate the look. I just think you're potentially in a coin flip situation, which I usually try and avoid.
Yeah, me too. I got you. I mean, he could have went over the PRA in the first game. He missed a floater, a couple easy floaters that were very makeable. So, but I hear your point.
Yeah.
All right, let's go off to the nightcap, the Game 3 Nuggets versus Lakers matchup. This is a coin flip with a little juice towards the Lakers, minus 115, give or take money line for the Lakers, minus 105 for the Nuggets, totals at 217. I texted you this earlier this morning, but I tried to galaxy brain the Lakers, kind of like I did in game one. It's like, the Nuggets are probably going to figure out a way to win. And all I had to do is bet a pick 'em, essentially. I'll take it. You know, the Nuggets are the best clutch team in the league from a net rating perspective. The LeBron and AD are balling, and the Lakers have held double-digit leads in both games. They found a way to squander them, and I don't think it's just a matter of, like, being at home for the Nuggets. You know, I do think it's just, like, when push comes to shove, they can figure out a way to score against the Lakers, and that's kind of that. They can even find a way to stop them. I've always kind of thought Jokic has another gear that he more or less can access whenever he pleases. He had a 27-20-10 triple-double. He only took 16 shots, which is roughly his average, as you pointed out to me earlier this morning. But there is a world where he goes, like, snaps like Thanos and just tries 25-30 shots. And what does that look like? We're talking about, like, a 35-20-10 game at that point. It's like, if someone puts up those kind of numbers, you usually don't win in the NBA. And I don't think the Nuggets have any interest in messing around with the Lakers. I think they're going to put their feet on their throat if they can. And the Nuggets are 2-0 in the series despite shooting worse from the field and not really getting to the foul line because they're just fucking crushing the Lakers in the battle of possessions. Dude, they have 33 more shot attempts in the series. They have half the turnovers, and they're out-rebounding them offensively 24-10. So if the Nuggets shoot better from the field, you know, they should be able to coast to a victory. And yeah, like the Lakers are due. They play him tough. Like, are they really going to lose 11 straight? I don't know if there is a guy you're going to lose 11 straight to. It could be Jokic. So it's possibly square, but I mean, I don't know. I live in LA and most people kind of like the Lakers, right? So I don't know. From my perspective, it's not that square. And really fading the Lakers and LeBron James is almost never square. So I'll take it. Do you have pushback? You going to piggyback or do your own thing?
I'm not going to touch the spread. And I mentioned this before. Like, my max play was the Nuggets to win the game by, or win the series by basically minus 1.5 games. So
get them out by 6, right?
Yeah. I mean, as long as the Lakers don't win 3 games or the series, it's a winner. And I still think that's going to happen, even if the Lakers win tonight, which I do kind of lean towards. I mean, it's the one game that would make the most sense for them to win.
The one with Scott Foster was the one that made most sense. Yeah. And they don't they don't have Scott Foster this game.
That is a fair point. Yeah, I mean, there's probably two ways to look at this. Either the Lakers are folded because they lost that last game in such a pathetic fashion, or they're super pissed and they come out with a lot of intensity and they hold the lead the whole time. But they've shown that they can't hold the lead against the Nuggets. I want to say this is like the third or fourth game that they've had in a row that they've had a double-digit lead and they lost the game to the Nuggets. I mean, it's just the first game they were up by what, like 12 at one point or something?
I think it got up to 15, right?
Yeah, and then this one was at least 20 with like, I don't know, halfway to go in the third quarter, and they still lost the game. And I was sitting there watching it. I'm like, if the Nuggets get this down to within 10 going into the fourth quarter, like, they're going to win this thing. Obviously, it took a buzzer beater to do it, but it's interesting.
It was a tie game buzzer beater, though.
Yeah, which is a little bit easier, but still.
Yeah, right, but like, if they go to overtime, you bet the Nuggets, right? The Nuggets are minus 150, probably, right?
Right. So a couple of thoughts that I have on how you might want to play this game, and I haven't necessarily fully gotten there yet. Like, I haven't actually put a bet on these, but I do kind of like Anthony Davis over his player or his points. He actually has worse stats at home than he does on the road this season, which it's not drastic, but it's still interesting to see that he scores less points, he rebounds less at home than he does on the road. And maybe that's because the Lakers as a team are better at home, so he doesn't have to do as much. Not really sure. But a lot of the conversation, or two things if you're Anthony Davis. One, you got the shot hit over you that won the game. And then you were basically mobbed by the entire Nuggets team immediately afterwards. The other part is, you had a great game. You scored 32 points for the second game in a row, but you only took, I think, one shot in the entire fourth quarter. So my guess is that they're going to have to kind of get him more involved. His point total is only at 24.5, so I would lean towards the over for him. He has scored either 32 points or 17 points in all 5 games against the Nuggets this season. So he scored 32 3 times, and he scored 17 twice, which is interesting.
What's his prop? His points?
24.5, which I think he should be able to get to. I want to say he got over that in the first half, or close to it in the first half of this past game. So,
I mean, he looked just great.
Great.
He looked phenomenal.
So the other way that I'm also thinking of, and I'm not quite sure I want to get there because I think this is going to be a closer one than I want, so kind of like that coin flip we were talking about, but is the under for the first quarter. It's at 55.5 right now, and the reason I'm thinking this is because Los Angeles has been on the road for all of their last, I think, 4 games at least, maybe 5, actually even more than that, because the regular season ended in New Orleans, right? And the Pelicans. So they've been on the road for 5 straight games. And now they come home for their first game. So a little bit different for that. And then the Nuggets have been home since whenever, you know, the season ended for them, which was also against the Grizzlies. And we're talking about, I don't know, probably 10 plus days that they've been at home. So my thought is maybe you just got to take a little while to get adjusted to this new, the new sight lines, the new stadium, all that stuff. So it is very possible the Lakers could get amplified by their, you know, by what just happened to them and all that stuff. But something tells me that, yeah, this is the first game on the road for the Nuggets in 11 days. So they may come out a little slow. I think the Lakers probably come out fairly intense. So I
neither shoot a lot of threes.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like 55 and a half would be asking a lot of points for them in the first quarter. So I lean towards the under for that. And I actually lean towards the under for the game. 216 and a half, I think, is the total right now. But the first quarter specifically, I think you can isolate and find find some value in. I'm trying to see what the totals were. So it'd be 53 in game two. No, 54, excuse me. And then it would have been 58 in game one for the totals for the team.
So 56-point average, right on the average?
Yeah. Hmm. So
I like your logic. I really do. Yeah. I think that's pretty sharp. I don't think I'm going to end up playing it, but
yeah, I it will probably be a coin flip, and I probably shouldn't be playing coin flips at this point because I'm not ahead, but it is at least a thought. So those are my two looks in the game. I'm not sure which one I'll get to, if I will get to either of them.
One player prop before we get out of here to bounce off you in the Lakers Nuggets. I'm looking at under Michael Porter Jr., 17.5 points. Got some slight juice, minus 112 at a DK, but that's the cheapest under that I can find on MPJ. He actually went under 17.5. What are you laughing about?
I'll tell you after you're done.
Oh, all right. He went under 17.5 in all four Western Conference Finals games against the Lakers last year. He did go over in the first two this series, I think 19 and 22. Maybe he flipped those, but those are the points that he scored in the first two games. So I do think the Lakers will pay a little more attention to him in game three. Maybe not. And that's kind of the gamble here. MPJ does shoot slightly worse on the road. He's only got the sixth highest usage rate on Denver in this series. So if LeBron or whoever plays a little more aggressively against him and doesn't like lose him on defense, he could stay under. So it just also kind of looks high for a role player. But again, it's a lean, not like a lock. What were you laughing about or what player prop are you looking at?
So I mentioned the player prop, but Porter Jr. was one of the first guys that I actually like reviewed and looked at. And I went back to see how he's performed against the Lakers this year. And he's, for whatever reason, done very well against them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the offense.
I think it's LeBron guarding him, right? And he's just kind of, LeBron plays lazy defense.
Maybe that's what it is. I really don't know. But I originally wanted to take the under as well. I couldn't do it based on the past performances and kind of just me thinking like, okay, well, if you're going to stop somebody, it's probably going to be Jokic and Murray that you got to go for. So that does leave Porter Jr. to have a lot more open shots. And there's been maybe one shot in his entire career that I've seen him pass up. So, and that just happened last game when he passed it to Aaron Gordon.
Yeah. And Jonte clearly had money on his under.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, my bro needs some more money. He's lost his job. You know,
the reason I like your angle on it, though, is because he shot exceedingly well in that last game. So if we talk about like Mike Connolly from my last podcast with you,
regression
shot so
mean.
Poorly. Right. Mm-hmm. He should come back down to earth a little bit. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him get 20, but it also wouldn't surprise me to score like if I see him get like 8 points either. So.
Yeah. And I mean, his bulk of his work is like catch and shoot, right? Like he's got, again, yeah, he's got the sixth lowest usage rate on Denver in the series. So they're not giving him the ball and clearing out, right? That's not how he's scoring. It's offensive rebounds and it's catch and shoot threes. And again, he can get there, right? So
yeah, of course he could, but
and I actually like his game a lot.
It's interesting. I was talking with somebody about this last night. Him and Jamal Murray have two of the like most interesting jump shots in basketball, because Porter Jr. jumps higher than pretty much anybody. Like if you watch, he jumps really high to shoot.
Yeah, and he's like 6'10". Like he gets up there.
Right, but it's surprising because usually like the higher you jump, the harder it is to replicate that every time. And with Murray, like if you watch his legs, the way they kick out when he shoots, it seems really stupid. Like it seems like it's a lot of unnecessary work because he almost like kicks them at an angle. But you know, obviously he's a professional, he makes them, but it's just it's an interesting combination that these guys have two of the weirder jump shots in the game. So something I was thinking about. But what do you think of this Murray's juice over 23.5? I would say if he goes over that, your Nuggets bet is going to look really good.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this the other day. I don't know if we were recording, but like if he scores 25 points, Nuggets can't really lose. So that's my thought on that. Yeah, I mean, if he's going to go over, you said 23.5 with juice on the over?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Minus 125.
Yeah, if he gets 24, love the Nuggets. Love them.
Yeah, I don't know how they would lose if him and Jokic are both at 25 plus. It's going to be really hard to beat them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, shit. Good stuff, man. Not sure if we're going to be back here tomorrow. There's a weird 5:30 Eastern Conference Eastern Time Zone tip off between the Pacers Bucks. So any conversation about that won't get too many like legs from a podcast publishing standpoint. So maybe me and David connect next week. We'll see what the schedules look like. People can get your NBA playoff betting packages at beatinthebookie.com. People could also follow David's just general gambling or commentary at X, Twitter, whatever, @futurepres2024. Me and him both do daily handicaps for outkick.com/betting. So check that stuff out. Do you have any parting thoughts?
Since we're probably not going to do a podcast, I could just tell you that I do like the Suns Timberwolves to go over tomorrow.
Okay.
So
just I like the Timberwolves just to thrash them again.
Yeah, that's fine. We don't have to go into it. Obviously,
is it plus four?
The exit. It is actually. Yeah.
7-point swing for home court. Okay. All right.
That seems pretty high. Yeah.
The Suns really need it, right? Okay. We'll see. Fair enough.
That's kind of why I like the total, to be honest with you. So we'll see. But
yeah, man. Hey, I know you're not a Bears fan, but jeez, you guys are getting Caleb Williams. If I were you, I'd be so jacked up. I'd be going to buy the Caleb Williams jersey.
Yeah. No, don't care. He's
generational.
I wish him all the luck. Yeah, well, I've heard that. I've also heard that he's going to be terrible. So I don't know what to believe.
But the people saying he's terrible are people that are knocking him for painting his fingernails and shit that has nothing to do with sports or his fucking howitzer.
Yeah, there's some other ones out there that I've read.
Footwork?
Are
we going to talk about footwork?
No, I don't. I'm not a judge of these talents or anything coming to the draft, and I don't even bet on the NFL draft.
You like my NFL stuff, dude.
I do like your stuff.
Listen to me. I'm telling you, he's gonna be fucking nasty. I am staking my reputation on him.
All I'll say is this: they have more pieces in place for him to be successful than they've given anybody else. They aren't changing over their head coach or offensive coordinator this year, so
they are.
He should have. They are changing.
Yeah, they got Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator. He's the guy who ran He was the offensive coordinator for Geno Smith. He was Sean McVay's passing coordinator. That's another reason why I like him. I think he's in a good spot.
Yeah. So I apologize. They didn't change their head coach at least, but they've done that to all their quarterbacks that they've drafted in the past. They've just kind of messed them all up. So I do think Williams is in a better opportunity than the Bears have provided for their other quarterbacks they've drafted.
I like that Poles guy too. You're the GM.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not bad. So we'll see. I mean, it'd be nice to have some sort of relevant football team or even any sports team at this point in Chicago, because the White Sox are on pace to win about 25 games this year. The Cubs look okay. The Bulls are in the hell of mediocrity, and we do have one really good player on the Blackhawks, but that's about all Chicago has going for it right now. So
I think you guys are a playoff. I think your football team is going to be in the playoffs next year.
Could be. Maybe.
And I'm pretty heavily invested in the Cubs winning the NL Central, so I still have hope in that one. Yeah, dude.
I didn't know that. I took the Brewers. I still think the Brewers are the cream of the crop for the Central.
Could be. We'll see. All right,
plus,
man.
The value is crazy.
You and I will be talking throughout the weekend, but maybe next week we'll talk to these guys about some NBA stuff. Until then,
yep.
Peace.